You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. Our government cares about
they
you.
Ain't giving get up a second on. Thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
ghetto
me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself.
Ghetto people.
Ghetto people. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself. Ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement, Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope all is well with you today. Hope you had a great day yesterday. Had a chance to do well, of course, yesterday was, of course, the day of misgivings, but I hope you had a chance to celebrate with family and friends, and it was a good day. It was a peaceful day. A lot of reminiscing, a lot of laughter, a lot of fun, the children and so forth, and all of that kind of good stuff, although it is under the pretense of a false. I mean, you know, really the European holidays. You need to get Dr. Bereshango's book. Man. But you still have days left. You got a weekend coming up, living for the weekend. So I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, must do, could do, should do, will do, and can do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it's not, I know you'll get it done anyway, because you're a serious brother, you're a serious sister, and you always persevere. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Look for podcasts, and then you can hit on podcasts, and then there you see at the top, African Perspectives. Hit on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, African Perspectives, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. These are the other programs that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Immediately following this program on Monday and Wednesday is the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. Black People Matrix with Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. On Monday evenings, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad from 6 to 8, followed by Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then you have Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. Then on Wednesday from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, her program at 8 p.m. on Wednesday evening. Thursday evening, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. This evening, it's Friday? Well, when 8 p.m. comes, brothers and sisters, it's time for an awakening. It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And then on Saturdays. No, nothing on Saturdays. We go to Sunday. Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. That's not me. It's Sister POC and her program Revive on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Every Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., it's the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. It is the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com, products that are produced by us. If you don't want to go online to do it, and you're in the Atlanta area, and you can go to the Greenbrier Mall. They have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall where you can get those products directly from WeBuyBlack. And toothpastes, detergent, all kind of good stuff. Go online and check it out, too. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bamani Tayemba is in the motherland. He is in South Africa, Cape Town and Johannesburg. And he'll be there till the 2nd. When he comes back, he'll be preparing to leave again. He'll be going to Ghana on the 24th of December to January 4th, 2020. And there's still room on that trip, as he explained when we had him on the air. If you want to check it out, go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org and check it out. Okay, if you want to see video of those trips that he's had over the years, and especially the latest one, which was this past May, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. If you want to see photos, go to Facebook.com/Bomani, and you can check out AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Shrine of the Black Madonna. The Shrine of the Black Madonna here in Atlanta in the West End, they got everything you need. They got furniture. They got artwork. They got clothing. They got the red, black, and green shoes and the gas shoes. They got the Kwanzaa kits. Kwanzaa's coming up in a few weeks, brothers and sisters. I know you're probably low on candles. They have them now. I was up in there last week. Also, too, they have books. It is a bookstore. And if they don't have the book that you were looking for, believe me, they'll get it. They're open Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 7, Sunday from 1 to 3. And they're located here in the West End. And the number to call is 404-549-8676, 404-549-8676. And they have a Holocaust Museum, an African Holocaust Museum. They also have a class, an African history class, a Know Thyself African history class. Baba Olatunji is an outstanding job of presenting the information. And it is every Saturday. It's tomorrow, free and open to the public, 1:30 to 3:30. 1:30 to 3:30 on Saturday, the African history class of Know Thyself. But if you don't have the time for that, but you like that information, you can get the multimedia library, brothers and sisters. It is now 7 terabytes of African enlightenment, well over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books. It is a treasure trove of information and knowledge. So you can pick that up from Shrine of the Black Madonna. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. You know what? If you are at We Buy Black, the kiosk, turn to your right or turn to your left, depending upon where you're standing, and there's the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. My good sister. And the number to call is 404-346-3263. And if they don't have the book that you're looking for, believe me, they'll get it for you. The Medu Bookstore, open 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Monday through Saturday, and then Sunday 12 to 6 in the Greenbrier Mall. The other bookstore I promote is the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, Brother Gazimde Ajamu, located in Lithonia. And the number to call is 404-519-8107, 404-519-8107. There is light in the Black Dot. Us lifting us. The Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, us lifting us. That Thursday night broadcast went off last night, sounded great. Every Thursday night at 9 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio, the number to call is 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, us lifting us. The Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Akabin Institute, Sister Yaba Rudy is having a lecture, African Warrior Women's Day. It is going to be Tuesday, December 10th. You can also, if you're not in the Atlanta area, but you want to participate, you can go
online on Facebook. Contact Sister Yah at 404-753-7237, 404-753-7237 for the African Warrior Women's Day Conference, Tuesday, December 10th at the Akabin Institute. Akabin Institute, they're educating our children, Sister Yah Baruti and her husband, Baba Baruti, Mawalimu Baruti. They need our support and they deserve our support. So make check or money order out to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's, once again, it is Akabin Institute, A-K-O-B-E-N. And it's located, 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Also, too, if you can send money through PayPal or Cash App, you can do that. If that's more convenient for you, the dollar sign and then Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, B-R-U-T-I, Baruti. Okay. Sanjay Dash Haiti, Sister Gabriella Aurelia, she's been doing work. Sister Gabby's been doing work in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti in the rural area, which, of course, is always sometimes most neglected. And yet she's been doing great work, and so she deserves to be supported. So check out Sister Gabby at Sanjay-Haiti, SONJE-AYITI.org, Sanjay-Haiti. Black Talk Radio Project, Brother Scotty Reed. Hope to get him on the air with me soon so we can talk about the Black Talk Radio Project, the media fund, see how it's going, see where they're at. You know, believe me, this brother's been doing serious work, and I'm honored to be on Black Talk Radio Project, or excuse me, Black Talk Radio Network. And so go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, scroll down, look on the right, and you'll see the button to donate to Black Talk Radio Network. The Inye Say Sim. Daily revolutionary thought. Yesterday, November 28th, a nation can rise no higher than its women. Elijah Muhammad. Civilization comes from the root word civil, which speaks to a society defined by the respect that its members have for each other. Unlike the level of mechanical technology or domination, which is the template for which European assess civilization, African people define civilization based on how people are treated and how they treat each other and the priority given individuals over things. Every society is not a civilization. We should understand that the treatment, character, freedom, and a vision of a society's women are incredibly important indicators of whether or not it is a civilization. However, we should add that a nation can rise no higher than its children, and its children can rise no higher than their mothers. The reason is that civilization is a measure of the quality of the life of its inhabitants, especially its most defenseless ones. And children are the most defenseless. Women have the knowledge and the capacity to survive, but children have not yet learned these skills. They require an extensive socialization in order to be able to successfully do so. Of course, we know that the mother is the first teacher, so she is not discounted in this equation. But in a world where the most defenseless are the most destroyed, we especially have to consider our children as vital factors in defending civilization and therefore the heights of which a nation can rise. Affirm, nothing is more important than the African family. Affirm, nothing is more important than the African family. November 29th. It takes a deep commitment to change and an even deeper commitment to grow. Ralph Ellison. How we live and relate to each other is not right. And we know it's not right. More often than not, it seems that we just don't have or want to put forth the time and energy that would require to build what makes sense and work. Whatever the reasons, we have become fat and lazy off the leavings of the Western garbage heap called Western civilization. No other excuse would make sense for adults claiming to recognize that they are divine and have an undeniable, unshakable responsibility to their people. No such responsible individuals would allow the callous, uncaring, and even vicious way we live and relate to each other to continue uncontested and unresolved. For nothing is unimaginable or impossible in the minds of people acting on divine authority. I read that again. For nothing is unimaginable or impossible in the minds of people acting on divine authority. Affirm, I act on divine authority. Affirm, I act on divine authority.
This call is being recorded.
November 30th. At no period in the history of the patriarchal cultures of Europe has motherhood been accorded the same status and reverence as it had in African cultures. Afemi. Since the beginning of European society, women have been considered innately inferior to men, of less social, political, and economic and religious value, and unfit for their love. Only other men and boys were seen as worthy of love of other men. The problem of disrespect and mistreatment for European women began when sex roles, socialization became hierarchical. Not too many centuries passed before their denigration became entrenched as a social policy. European men continued to process by systematically relegating them to positions of serving them as domestic labor. Eventually, European women found themselves without the right to own land or property, walk around in public without a male companion, participate in political process, or even have a soul. With this disgrace came the dishonor and divine punishment of bearing and raising the children, tasks considered unnaturally burdensome but necessary evils for the continuation of society. In the end, virtually everything associated with European womanhood came to be associated with pain and disrespect. From this evolved the anthropomorphic, misogynistic, anti-family feminists of the day, embraced by females who demand that they be judged as individuals but are quick to measure all men as one. Affirm, I disrespect no African women. Affirm, I disrespect no African women. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. I'm going to take a break. And when I come back from the break, brothers and sisters, we'll continue on with the program. You're listening to African Perspectives. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Yeah. the whip over. Yeah. You want it fast or slow? Girl, don't say no. Don't say no. Baby, let's ride. Let's cruise.
Baby, baby,
and it doesn't matter.
I know whatever comes our way,
you know,
you and me, so strong, you know why.
You and me, we would go
together.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Excuse me. Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. That was Jaheim. And then, of course, that was Jaheim with Let Us See. Beautiful song. Once again, we have some good conversation today, centering around to what today is called Black Friday. We're going to talk about its history. But first, I want to read to you what I've been reading for the last few months, and that is about Kwame Nkrumah, because this program promotes independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, once he helped liberate the country of Ghana from European and colonialism, British and colonialism, he understood it wasn't about Ghana or Nigeria, Cameroon or Togo or Sierra Leone or any other country in Africa. It was about the continent. It was about Africans being one and managing the land and the resources. So he, along with many other Africans, but the European stronghold that they had on the African mind was far deeper. So he says in 1961 in a speech of freedom, he says, "I believe strongly and sincerely that with the deep-rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for human lives, and intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture, united under one federal government, will emerge not just as another world bloc to flaunt its wealth and strength, but as a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear or envy and suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on the hope, trust, and friendship and dedicated to the good of all mankind." Years later, he said this: "If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we will be haggling and wrangling among ourselves until we are once again colonized and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we suffered heretofore." How sadly prophetic. Marimba Ani. "To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and culture in order to understand the effect the European has had on our ability to think victoriously. We must be able to separate our thoughts from Europeans' thoughts so as to visualize a future that is not dominated by Europe. This is demanded by an African world view, an African-centered view, because we are Africans. And because the future towards which Europe leads us is genocide. And that's a fact. I know a lot of times we don't want to deal with these hardcore facts, but that's a fact. And we see it. Today is Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, and it's usually called Black Friday, but it wasn't called that initially, of course. It evolved, this term Black Friday, and has a lot of history, ironic history. I know for me, one of the histories is, Friday the 13th. Friday the 13th was called Black Friday. And people in our community in Milwaukee back then, we had Black Friday, where we would come to somebody's house, potluck. We would share talents, those who could sing, who wanted to sing, and spoken word or whatever, and told stories. Black Friday. You know, might have a ladder there, walk under a ladder, break a mirror, you know. I don't know about no damn black cats, but Black Friday, Friday the 13th, you know, because the Europeans said it was bad. Because, you know, the number 13 is not a bad number. It's a good number. I'm sorry, folks. Friday the 13th is a good number, the number of transformation. We'll talk about that when we get off into the Kwanzaa season in a few weeks. So, you know, but the fact that black, anybody about Friday, about black in this society is a adverse word. White is good, angelic, you know, wholesome, clean, pure, white. Black is evil, sullied, demeaning, degrading, black. So they didn't use this term. This term is a relatively new term, and it comes about because of accounting. You know, in business, you don't want to be in the red. In business, you want to be in the black. And so that's how this particular word became about, Black Friday. There was other Black Fridays in the history of this country, when those two Caucasians tried to corner the market on gold way back in the 1860s or something like that, you know. And then, of course, there was a time in Philadelphia in the 50s, the day after Thanksgiving was so chaotic and so hectic, the traffic jams and so forth, you know. And then also, too, the day after Thanksgiving, because people were calling in sick, they didn't want to work the day after Thanksgiving, you know. So, and then, but when they saw this shopping piece, they, instead of saying Black Friday, they called it Big Friday or Big Saturday. Well, that didn't catch on, you know. But in terms of the day Black Friday, I don't know. I remember more so becoming more prominent in the 90s, especially as you got into the 2000s, with all these, you know, sales and so forth, and saying Black Friday, you know, because believe me, and if you say otherwise, I don't know where you live, but you could have not used Black Friday back in the day because of how adverse the word black was. Hell, we didn't even want to use black. Before the so-called Black Power movement, you call somebody black. I ain't black. I'm a Negro. I'm colored, you know, because of how damaging the word had become, because how the Europeans who control the language had used it. Had something degrading and something black. I mean, something bad, you know. So, no, they didn't call the day after Thanksgiving Black Friday. That's recent. That's recent. I know somebody sent me a piece about Black Friday being when we were captives. that they had the sale going on of our people, you know, trying to get rid of inventory or something to that effect. You know, let me pull that up here. Yeah, they said that they show a bunch of brothers and sisters in chains, you know. This is a sad history and meaning of Black Friday. You know, it was during the captive trade in which Africans, during Black Friday, captives were sold at a discount to boost the economy. Hence, captives were were sold. Yeah, it's hard to read this. The date of the sale of that Friday is in November, and it raises questions of whether, as Africans, we should be supportive of. Of course not. The term Black Friday originated with the practice of selling off captives on the day after Thanksgiving. The origins of the term Black Friday have become, that's not true. Now, do we really need to emphasize or embrace this kind of torture? Or are we such fools that we don't even research what has been called Black Friday? And that, well, I've researched it and this is not in there, but I understand what was trying to be said and what was trying to be done. And they show a list of who would cost what. A boy named Sandy, who was 7 years old, cost $300, you know. And so, you know, I don't know. Anyway, let me think. So, having a little trouble here, but I'm going to be fine. Just got me some water, and that's going to be good. So this thing with Black Friday, it's all about economics. Of course, everything in a society is about economics. When they understood that they could use that term Black Friday and not be offensive, not offensive to us and so forth, the term Black Friday began to be used. Because once again, in a society, the term black is not a good term. It is a term denoting evil, denoting something bad, denoting, you know. So, I'm still trying to get it together here. Okay, I think I've gotten it together and tell you. Okay, there you go. Once again, if you want to join this conversation, please give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're talking about Black Friday and its origins. In Philadelphia, after the holiday, after Thanksgiving, that next day, the streets were so congested, you know, Macy's or Gimbel's had a big sale and traffic everywhere. These police officers mentioned, oh, this is a terrible, it's like a black day, it's like Black Friday, you know. But that didn't stick, and nor did any of the other stuff, you know. They were just complaining, and of course I said earlier that there were some workers who, instead of, they decided, you know, not to come to work, and many of them called in sick, you know, Black Friday. But the real thing on Black Friday is this capitalistic system for you to spend your money. Today, it is now the largest shop. I mean, billions of dollars are spent. And although Cyber Monday, this Monday, going online, has taken over. Because, you know, many people don't want to go into the malls. The hassle of that is more convenient to be at home, to go online and shop online, you know. And then now some malls or brick-and-mortar stores are trying to be more creative and trying to entice you in. They're offering all kinds of other amenities that you can partake of, particularly in the malls. You know, you can have massages, and some stores even have some hors d'oeuvres as you shop, you know. So, I mean, anything that, of course, to get your money, because that's what America is. America's about, you know, money, spending money. This is capitalism. You know, what do I suggest you do today? Oh, you know what I suggest you do today, and that is spend money with us. Let Black Friday mean spend money with only Black people, whatever way possible. Whatever way possible. I mean, it would be great if we had here in the Atlanta area, I'm not sure where you live, what you have in your area, that we had some service stations. So when you went out to get some gas, you went to the brother or sister who has a service station. And if you had to wait a little longer, you waited. If you had to pay a little bit more, a few cents more, you paid it. Man, I'm so sorry. And so restaurants, clothing stores, it might be some pop-ups. I know that last year, a couple pop-ups that had little markets, pop-up markets. But I mean, go to the stores that are owned and run by us. Spend money with us on this day. But I know that we are entrapped. These folks have captivated and control our minds. And we do what they do. We want to do what they do because they have captivated our minds. And we believe just like they believe. We're not Black. We're American. And we have every right to celebrate being American like any other Americans, which is a damn shame because we don't run nothing. We don't own nothing. Here in this Atlanta area, they don't even have a damn supermarket. We Buy Black, one of the people I promote, they're trying to pull money together to develop a supermarket that would promote and sell the produce that is produced by us and other things that are produced by us. So this supermarket would be about us. Now, I would think that hopefully that they would look at the model that we have of us lifting us, you know. I mean, based upon what I've already seen, they have asked, and about 1,400, I believe, responded in donating, or 1,400, 14,000, I can't remember. But they have $400,000, you know. They have about 14, and about 14. So but they have $400,000. But they said in order for them to do this, they're going to need $1.2 million. So you see, they're a long way off. Literally about $800,000. And so, you know, just to say, brothers and sisters, give what you can give, and I throw $10 out there, that ain't going to be about nothing. Yes, I made a contribution, but you would need literally hundreds of thousands to do the same. But if you had an organization, you had a framework to say, brothers and sisters, this is the way we're going to do this. Don't leave it to chance if you want to do something like that. If you really want it to happen, do it in a framework of an organization and something that's already there. Now, granted, I know, and I'm not, you know, I'm hurting because of what happened to us lifting us, our cafe, and the good work that many good people put into it. Damn. Once again, I'm sorry. Let me clear my throat. I think I got it now. It feels a lot better. I think I'm where I need to be. But yes, I'm hurt by it. You know, I really am. That we as a co-op, a collective group of people, that we had to close. That hurt. You know? Because we should have been able to sustain ourselves. The members of the co-op should have understood that this business that we've started is my business. And if I got to give a little more than just my $50 a year, and that's all it took, $50 a year as a membership, or starting to pay on my shares or whatever I had to do, I should do. We all should do. When we looked at the model of collective, being collective, of a cooperative, we looked at a model, one of them here in the States, in Cleveland, one of them in Spain, the Madrigal model. All of these work because why? There was a commitment by the people who were involved. and they become self-sustaining. It could and it should happen here with us. There are more of us here in the Atlanta area who have some wherewithal than probably anywhere else. Although I do know the income gap is wider between us, of those of us as American Africans who have and those of us who have not. I know that. But there's a lot of us who come here with resources and money and yet don't pull it together. There are many of us who live in subdivisions and cul-de-sacs and gated communities that are ours. When you drive through, they're beautiful homes. I'm quite sure they're immaculate inside because the lawn is just, you know, cut to the T. The landscaping is beautiful. But yet we haven't, that's it. It would have been great if they said, hey, let's pull these monies together and let's build a mall down the road from here. We can have some employment for our children and, more importantly, provide some goods and services for us. No. They want to go to, you know, they want to go to North Mall, this mall, you know, Lenox Mall, Perimeter Mall. The conditioning of our people is sad. It's sad. I mean, it's just like yesterday. I know people came together and you know, they say, well, Brother Oshie, that's you talking about what happened way back then, but this is what it means today. Just like the next holiday coming up. Yeah, man, but so what about that? You know, so what, it ain't true. But this is what it means today. I ain't talking about these images and so forth, but this is what it means today. Not understanding, no, it meant what it meant then, and it means that way today. You're just oblivious, or you just don't want to see the truth or deal with it. And that's what's sad, because we continue to be played. You know, we continue to get played. So this Black Friday thing, and like I said, I remember because of Friday the 13th, and of course saying it was a bad number, evil and so forth, and we had Black Fridays where we would come together and, you know, but there was no such thing as Black Friday talking about in the general society. You couldn't do it. Not because of how adverse the word was, black. Merchants objecting to the use of that word referred to one of the most important shopping days of the year. No, that couldn't happen. But because they control the narrative, and then they throw it out there. Well, this is what it means, because we want to be in the black. And believe me, it is true, because at this time of year, with all of the sales and so forth, when things are lagging from January all the way up into October, oh, it has to change. I got to make a profit. I've been up and down in the red this month, a little bit in the black and more in the red and so forth. I want to be in the black. So at this time of year, I'm going to push this. I want you to be in my store. I want you to drop that money. I want you to call my 1-800 number and buy my products. That's what this is all about. That's what time it is. Yeah. When we come back on this Black Friday, I caught a piece on racism. You know, I have been a student. I'm a student on everything because I ain't an expert on nothing, okay? I'm a student, always learning, always willing to learn. But one of the things I remember many, many years ago, about 40-some years ago, I thought about, how did this world get like this? What happened? And why is it being maintained this way? So, not having learned a lot in school, one of the things that helped me learn a lot was being able to be a firefighter and work at the firehouse. So when I'm not doing anything, I began to read. Then on my off days. And one of the top subjects I began to look at was racism. How Europeans came in to put themselves in the position that they're in and us at this position, and why it persists, why it is maintained. So we're going to take a look at that and discuss some of that. So I hope you can stay with us. You know, we're going to take another break. That's great that we had two breaks this time. So we'll be right back. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back.
Let me just sit down and relax a minute. Let me tell you about it. Where I might end up. You might see me on the east side, the west side. I'm even going across the bridge, oh, cause I hear they really get down over there. Well, party, party. Well, 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 well,
rocking to the beat.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and Black Talk Radio Network.com. Black Talk Radio Network.com. That was Johnny Kemp. Just Got Paid, followed by the OJs, Living for the Weekend. That's right. That's what time it is, Living for the Weekend. That's what we do, don't we? You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays after my program is The Black People Matrix from 1 to 3 with Brother Franklin Jones on Monday and Wednesdays. On Monday evenings, Acres of Diamonds, Brother Jahad from 6 to 8, followed by Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Then there's Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey at 9 p.m. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. And then on Friday, if it's Friday and 8 p.m. is Eastern, oh, you know it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays. And then on Sunday, Revive with Sister POC is from 11 to 1.
And then Sunday evening, once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 7 p.m. on Sunday. And then every Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern, it's a Warren Ballantyne show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Saw this article online, MrOnline.org, talking about how racism works today. Article written by a Caucasian, John Molyneux. And it's dated just the other day. And how racism works today. Understanding racist discourse will help us fight it. The first thing to note is that virtually everybody, including those who actively promote a trade or a racial hatred like Donald Trump, denies being a racist. Well, first let me say, there's no such thing as race. Race is a human construct. Europeans devised the concept of race. You could look at Johann Blumenbach as one person, or Carol Linnaeus, all on the 1600s. They came up with the idea of race, giving themselves the top position, everybody else a lower position, with us at the lowest position. Caucasoid, Negroid, and Mongoloids, they don't exist. These are human constructs. See, even though they may not exist biologically, they sure in the hell exist socially as a social construct. And they have imposed this on the world. And they have done such a damn good job, so to speak, that everywhere on this damn planet, that people who are dark-skinned feel less than. People who are melanated, more melanated, feel degraded and demeaned. Of course, sometimes they are simply deliberating, lying, but there is more than just that involved. There's also the fact that racist ideology has changed significantly over time, and that contemporary racism is, in some ways, very different from the racism of the past. Today's racists often try to exploit this by talking as if only the older version of racism really counted. Racism, as it is developed from the 16th century, the 1500s onward, through the 19th century and earlier 20th century, was a product and a reflection of captivity and colonialism. It preached the inherent superiority of Caucasians and the inherent inferiority of anybody other than Caucasians. So it didn't make a difference. He was, you know, light, bright, damn near white to blue, black. If you were not Caucasian, if you not to signify that you were a Caucasian, a European, a white person, then you were less than. With, of course, African people at the very bottom of the hierarchy, and then, of course, Asians and so-called Middle Easterners somewhere in between. Racists of this kind believe that Caucasian people had an innate right. They had an innate right, a duty, even to rule the people of color, all the other people, to conquer and subdue them for their own good. That's right. They were doing it for our own good. Even today, dear brothers and sisters, there are some of us who believe today, who have openly stated it, that that our captivity was good for us because it exposed us to European ideas and concepts and culture. It exposed us to the European theology of Christianity to save us. Racism of this kind believed that Caucasian people had an innate right or even a duty to rule over people, to conquer and subdue them for their own good and to lead the world. Many such racists argued that the belief that this doctrine of Caucasian superiority had a scientific basis. Moreover, this belief in Caucasian superiority, though it had its honorable opponents, was part of an official dominant ideology in Europe and its offshoots around the world, Australia, anywhere else the Caucasians are. For example, Abraham Lincoln stated unequivocally, "I am not, nor have ever been, in favor of bringing about any way the social and political equality of white and black races." There's applause. He spoke this to some group. that I am not nor ever have been in favor of making voters or jurors of Negroes, nor of qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. And I will say in addition that there is a physical difference between the white and the black races, which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together on terms of social and political equality. And inasmuch as they cannot live together, while they do remain together, there must be a position of superior and inferior. And I, as much as any man, is having the superior position assigned to the white race. Abraham Lincoln. In 1895, the British colonial secretary, Joseph Chamberlain, said, "I believe the British race is the greatest of all governing races the world has ever seen." And Cecil Rhodes proclaimed that, "It came to me in that fine, exhilarating air of South Africa that the British were the best race to rule the world." And they meant it. And they did it. I attended a group called the Black Men Lab here in Atlanta, over on Hamilton Road, the YMCA. And they were talking, the group was talking to a group of brothers about college and so forth and securing scholarships. And one of the young men said he got a number of scholarships. One of them was a scholarship through Bill and Melinda Gates. And so before the program was ended, I had a chance to say something. I just wanted to say something. I said, you know, very succinctly here, not all money is good money, because you got to know who Bill and Melinda Gates is. I know you know him from the creating of Microsoft and so forth, but you got to know what he has done and what he's doing with his money. You know, when you talk about a vaccine, usually when I hear about a vaccine, it is to help people, it is to cure something, it is to eradicate something, a vaccine. But he said it, and he's on camera saying it. "We have developed a good vaccine to help with population control." Population control. It is a well-known fact that Bill Gates have been trying to control the population of the people on the planet, particularly Africans. You know? So then I mentioned, as I just read here, about Cecil Rhodes. Cecil Rhodes was determined to make as much of the continent of Africa British red. All South Africa. He killed millions of our people. So the Rhodes Scholarship that he established, and I'm quite sure those scholarships were meant for Caucasians. And I know, you know, apparently today, you know, many people apply for a Rhodes Scholarship, and what it is, you finish school and you apply for the scholarship to further your education in Oxford or Cambridge or whatever in England in various fields, literature, science, whatever, a Rhodes Scholarship. And I remember one of the players for Florida State had his interview, and then it was accepted with his scholarship. And I remember him having to come at halftime because he was doing his interview process, and they showed him getting out of the helicopter and running into the stadium and everything like that. And he played a couple of years at NFL, and now he is a neurosurgeon, I believe, something like that. You know, very smart brother, got the Rhodes Scholarship. But I kept saying, brothers and sisters, do we know who this Cecil Rhodes is? Do we know this man? Do we know what he has done to accumulate all this wealth to establish a scholarship that everybody can apply for around the world? It's like an article I just read the other day about the number of people of color who now get Rhodes Scholarship. I don't give a damn. You got to understand who Cecil Rhodes is and who the damn British are and what they do. Hell, that money is ours. The wealth that he stole and killed, the land he took, later forming the country of Rhodesia, which later became the country of Zimbabwe, South Africa, the De Beers Diamond Mine, all of that. Brothers and sisters, I look at it like this. A brother or sister accepting a scholarship in the name of Cecil Rhodes is tantamount or the same as a European Jew accepting a scholarship in the name of Adolf Hitler. You're right. That wouldn't happen, would it? No, it wouldn't. In the racism of today, however, this narrative of white superiority has largely been overtaken by a narrative of white victimhood. The problem now, according to the racists, is that we, and this we can be Irish, English, France, whatever, whoever, are being done down and disadvantaged by the immigrants or foreigners or whoever. This does not mean that the old racism has entirely disappeared. Far from it. It remains as a underlying underpinnings of the new racism. It is important, for example, in determining which migrants, immigrants, and foreigners are claimed to be coming over here, taking our jobs and sponging off our welfare systems. Africans, Muslims, not Americans and Australians, and in the idea that these migrants, these refugees, these asylum seekers, will bring crime and molest our women. But the racism of inherent white supremacy is seldom articulated openly by the mainstream or even far-right political politicians and is deemed unacceptable in official discourse. Of course it is, because it's ugly and virile, but it remains. And it's now, because of Trump, many become emboldened. You've seen what happened in Virginia. You will not replace us. You know, you've seen what happened the next day after the tiki torch khaki wearing dudes were marching down the street and what they did. You see what's happening throughout this country. It is nothing new. It has been there. It was open and virile and ugly years ago. And then, of course, with the 50s emerging and definitely in the 60s of the Black Power movement, and then the perception of some kind of equality in the 70s of through affirmative action and other programs. No, brothers and sisters, we must understand that no matter what, Europeans are going to do whatever they have to do to maintain and sustain the privilege they created for themselves. This shift in the racist narrative has a material base. It reflects the fact that while the radical hierarchy of nations established by capitalism, slavery, and colonialism is very much still in place, direct colonial rule has largely disappeared, but the neocolonialism, believe me, yes, direct colonialism has disappeared, but neocolonialism and the fact that Europeans were able to displace other governments and put in such as Australia, New Zealand, things that they have taken. Still in place, direct colonial rule has largely disappeared, but there is a development since the Second World War, a significant presence in Europe, North America, etc., of immigrants from the global South. Hence, the main purpose of racism for the system has changed from justifying imperial conquest and rule to scapegoating and divide and rule within the imperial countries. For this, the narrative of victimhood works better than the narrative of superiority. So this new racism is the racism of Europeans looking at themselves as victims, because their numbers they've always been a minority. So they ain't no damn trip. And they know that. They may have a perception that they are, like in this country, majority rules in this country, right? You remember that. But they've always been globally, but yet they still rule. And they rule because of their dominance, particularly in superior weaponry. So now they're the victims. They're being displaced. Another historical factor in the change shaped the racism is the huge historical and ideological defeats inflicted upon the old system of racism in the course of the last century. These include the defeat of Nazism, the exposure of the Holocaust, the victims of anti-colonial struggles from India, Vietnam, Cuba, Kenya, all these places where colonialism had ruled there now no more, Ghana, and many other places. The great civil rights struggle, the Black Power movement in the U.S., and the defeat of apartheid in South Africa. And even though the defeat of apartheid in South Africa, Caucasians still rule. Caucasians still run South Africa. Because if you have the military and you are in control of the money, that's right, you're in control. And that's what time that is. The best known leaders of those struggles became heroic global icons: Gandhi, Dr. King, Malcolm X, Nelson Mandela, and the old essentialist racism was profoundly discredited. It became, for most people, the hate that dared not speak its name. Of course, there is still a need to justify periodic wars, which, wherever possible, are presented as humanitarian interventions, just like the coup they just did in Bolivia. Just like the coup they just the United States, just like what happened in Libya. The blood of Muammar Gaddafi on the hands of Barack Obama. That's why I can't stand Barack Obama. I'm serious. And now, what is he talking about now? He's saying that if Bernie Sanders looks like he's going to get the nomination, I'm going to work hard against him because we can't have that kind of radical. No, something radical needs to happen in this damn place, although I don't believe it ever will because this ain't the place for it to happen. And as you can see, Barack Obama's willing to defend this. Of course, there is still a need to justify periodic wars wherever possible, you know. And since the 1980s, the ratcheting up of Islamophobia, which is also doubles up nearly neatly for spreading fear and division on the domestic front. Hence, the vehement denials of racism by people who are just engaged in blatant racist dog whistles. So long, they claim, as they have not engaged in racism of the earlier variety, i.e. they proclaim the innate inferiority of people of color or use the most obvious hate words. You know those words. I shall come back to question the hate speech shortly. They are not being racist, nor matter how they have been pointing their fingers, sowing divisions, targeting groups, or fostering suspicions and hate. Hence, they also persistent claim by progenitors that they are not being racist because the category of people they are attacking are not race. Once again, there is no such thing as race. But to Caucasians who divide this process, we are a race. But Islam is not a race. Judaism is not a race. These are religions. There is no such thing as a race. Proclaim the innate inferiority of people of color, use the most obvious hate words. Hence, they also persistent claim by the progenitors that they are not being racist because the category of people that they are attacking are not a race, as in I'm not being racist attacking Muslims because Islam is a religion, not a race. Or I'm not racist when I go and I have to go at travelers. Travelers are Irish, but Irish are Caucasians. But of course, Irish didn't used to be Caucasians because the British dogged out the Irish. And they were, quote, the niggers of the Great Britain, of the British Isles. Behind this lurks the idea that it is racist to be anti-Negro or anti-Jewish because Negroes and Jews are racist. No, Jews are not a race. Jews are anybody who subscribes to the theology of Judaism. That's who Jews are. They're not a race. Behind completely false notion in biological scientific terms, but not racist to target Poles, Albanians, or Romanians. But this, these are nationalities. These are the nations, Poles, Albanians, and Iranians, and Romanians. But the only excuses the progenitors, if we operate with the older conception of racism, Muslims, Poles, Albanian, Romanians, of course, are precisely among the main targets of contemporary racism. As we have seen recently in Ireland, and they give some names here, and I'm too sure that because this article is coming from out of Europe, the reaction of would-be established politicians who get caught up and caught out in overtly racist comments, the use of the N-word, the K-word, B-words, often to apologists, especially if they get told by their party leaders, you can't be doing this because you know you're messing up the party fervor. Apart from the fact that the only ever apologists after they have been called out. And it is notable that the standard form of apology is to deny any racist intent and apologize for any offense called. I apologize if I offended anybody. This is a double effect. First, it trivializes the racism. The problem with racism is not just that it causes offense. It is that racism, by dehumanizing the victim, justifies, incites the worst in humanity. It justifies slavery. It justified imperialism. It justifies the Holocaust. And now it is used to justify letting refugees and immigrants die in the Mediterranean. We should remember that all the fine Gauls voted against rescue operations in the Mediterranean. Europeans voted against the rescue of people in all those boats. You remember a few years ago were trying to flee. And the fact they're trying to flee is because of what racism has done. They destabilize countries. That's what they have done. Racism is not a question of manners. It is a question of oppression. And hate speech encourages that oppression. The second effect is that it begins to shift the narrative towards seeing the perpetrator of the racist speech as the victim of liberal political correctness. He said, Verona is very outspoken, a very independent person. She's not going to be the kind of person who toes the party line. Thus, when Murthy invokes the crudest Islamophobia stereotype and the weaponized it against vulnerable asylum seekers in a way that justifies their inhuman incarceration and deportation, she is being outspoken and independent. But no, she's being racist, with the subtext that it is just those holy liberal, you know, Dublin, Ireland folks. And this is exactly how the far right racists react. He gives some more names here who I'm not familiar with, pretty much in Europe. These arch bullies who wish to be hounded, humiliated, incarcerated, and deported, the most vulnerable and oppressed people on this island, like to see themselves as the hard done by victims being deprived of their freedom of speech. You know, they always do that. Back to the victimhood. It is back again to the narrative of victimhood that is so central to contemporary racism of today. The point here is that people, get away these guys here. They are the victims of banks. They are the victims of corporations, the landlords, the developers, the governments, the deep state, the state of bureaucracy, and so forth. The function of racist narratives is to trade on that feeling of victimization, give voice to it, but direct it toward the outsider and the media, even when they appear to be being critical and subtly complicit in this agenda by amplifying it. As Malcolm X once said, if you're not careful, the newspaper will have you hating the people who are being oppressed and loving the people who are doing the oppressing. Yep. So, certain conclusions follow from the understanding of the nature of the current racism for the struggle against it. Current conclusions follow from this understanding of the nature of the current racism for the struggle against it. Number one, racism must be called out and denounced wherever necessary, actively mobilized against it. This is vital. Racism must not be allowed to become normalized and acceptable, but it is. But it is not enough to just condemn it as if it were self-evidently wrong, because it is, precisely because it presents itself as a narrative of victimhood. It is not always easy for people to see why it is wrong. In condemning it, liberal humanitarianism is insufficient. As always, we have to expose it as a weapon of divide and rule and diversion of justified anger or false targets. The mainstream media cannot do this because it needs a strong critique of the government and the systems that they are institutionally forbidden to make. It requires a radical and a hard left voice. Number two, it is necessary to drive a wedge between the racist and the fascist far right and the rest of the social spectrum. At the moment they are small and marginalized, they should be kept so. we also have to drive a wedge between the political purveyors of racist poison and the ordinary people who may at times be susceptible to that poison. It is particularly important in a situation like where he's, I can say, they're making mention of stuff I'm not sure, but when I'm reading this, I'm looking at here. I'm looking at the people who have been radicalized here, the white, the Caucasians who go to Walmart with guns to shoot immigrants, the people who go into a church and shoot our people. I'm looking at that mindset. Treating all the logical population has one reactionary racist mass. Our aim is to turn the decent majority against both the hard racist minority and the cynical political operators. Right away, this article has a misnomer because to me, I believe the majority of Caucasians are racist. I used to say if the majority of Caucasians were not racist, it wouldn't exist. It wouldn't exist. If the Caucasians run this, we're adamant about changing things, about changing and in eradicating homelessness, eradicating poverty, eradicating miseducation, it exists because that's who they are. To achieve the aim, socialists have to be the best campaigners on the real issues of affecting the mass of people. Health, wages, services, unfair taxes, critically at the moment, housing, insofar as socialists gain credibility at the best, has the best fighters on these issues, and that socialists are. And that's why there's that fear of what Barack was talking about, socialists. Socialists are. They want what should be best for the majority of the people. Insofar as socialists gain credibility as the best fighters of these issues, they will also have a better chance of being listened to when it comes to debates about racism, and drawing the mass of people into active struggle is the best way to isolate the races. But it has to be stressed that such struggle has to be accompanied by an anti-racist campaigning, and it is not an excuse for ducking the questions of racism. There is no guarantee, as we have seen over the water charges, that the housing campaigners or anti-government activists will also be anti-racist. Moreover, it is important that in any campaign over health, housing, or climate change or whatever, the anti-racist message must be heard and taken on board within the movement. Such a three-pronged approach is necessary to defeat the narrative of victimhood that characterizes contemporary racism. Simple liberal humanitarianism and pleas for tolerance will not be enough. 646, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshi. How are you and the good people of the listening audience who hopefully are not out there spending their money with the Yoruba and are sitting down getting this lesson that you're trying to give them today?
I hope that's the case. I hope that's okay. And Jay, if they listen well, then they know that what they're going to do today is if they do go out and spend some money, it's going to be with somebody else. They're going to spend some money with American. I would hope that would be the case, that they would try their best to find a place that they want to spend some money. It's going to be with us. I agree.
I would hope so.
Yes.
I would really hope so. I got to get ready to go out and spend a little bit of dollars with my people. You know, I got to give them something.
That's for
today,
sure.
Because, you know, this devil, to show you how his thing is really falling, he got people out there on his holiday trying to make sales.
Yeah.
And make money for him. And, you know, it's sad when they talk about it's supposed to be a day of family getting together, and you got to get the family out to spend money to keep your thing going. I just absolutely laugh, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's comical the way that, you know, unfortunately, Brother Ochi, we as a people are being manipulated by this devil.
Of course.
It's really amazing. He manipulates us at every level and that every opportunity and every chance that he gets to take us out of our natural circumference, to be able to do what? To, as you would say, a fallacy of getting along.
Yeah.
White people ain't got no use for us, man.
No. No, they don't, brother. Hey, listen, Jay. Jay.
What they use for us?
Right. All the cotton has been picked, okay? It's over, you know? All the other stuff.
Black folks ain't gonna pick cotton no more.
Yeah.
You can't get no black person to pick cotton today. They look at you like you're crazy. So what they do, they go out there and they find someone else, the Mexican. Then they take advantage of the Mexican. And the Mexicans see the difference in a way between us and the Mexican is the Mexican will work collectively with one another, live 20 in a house, in a two-bedroom house.
Right, right.
Take shifts to build up, to move the next one along and the next one along, and then they'll get to a position to where as they could go back to Mexico and make a better life for themselves.
Well, you know,
we don't understand that.
Yeah.
We don't understand that. You know, what they do is they use their opportunities to go to the next level and to build up their community.
Right.
And
that's what they should do. I mean, you know, when they come here, they're living two or three families to a house. They're saving money and so forth until they buy a bigger place, a four family, an eight family and so forth. They're being collective. They are being sworn to work with one another to, you know, to stem the tide of all the bad stuff that has happened to them in Mexico and here to build a better thing for themselves. And I have no problem at all with that, you know?
Hey, Oshie, quiet as kept. Listen to this, brother. Do you know other nationalities use the teachings of Marcus Garvey and Elijah Muhammad more than we do as a people?
I would believe that.
Do you know that they take some of the principles of those great men and use it to build up their communities and their neighborhoods and do the necessary things to flourish as a people? You know what I mean?
I agree.
It's just absolutely tragic that we as a people haven't figured out how to come together collectively and talk about what you were saying earlier, pooling our money together, building resources, building communities, building the necessary things. Do you know one of the reasons why these devil cops don't kill other nationalities? Because they know that their homeland is going to cause issues and problems with America.
Right. And you're right.
And that they're going to say anything. But you think the African over in Africa would come together and make certain demands? I understand that they can't because of what's going on. But the sad thing is that the same thing is happening to their people over there.
Right. Well,
It's just a sick lack of understanding on our part that, like I say, and I will say every day for the rest of my life, the white man is your perpetual enemy.
Yep.
He shows it to you 24/7, a week, 365 days a year. He's your perpetual enemy. And for some reason, we have a group of people who still haven't figured out what he is and what his agenda is. Our most talented and skilled individuals, they always either want them a white woman or they want to work for the white man. They never want to build their own institution. They never want to come together collectively and get the hell out of here and go back home.
That's right. Sad.
Nobody can say to me that our talented so-called temps, as they refer to them in the mutts and muttits of the fraternities and sororities, don't have the necessary skills to come together collectively and do anything that it takes to build a society, to build a community,
right,
to do the necessary things to go home to the motherland and take a country and make it flourish. There's no skill that them sick Negroes, as I refer to them, have. They have all skills. If you basically a black college grad you in some sort of fraternity or sorority. Around 70% of black college grads are in some sort of fraternity or sorority. And them Negroes can't come together collectively and do a damn thing. The type of money that they have collectively could wipe out so many problems in the black community.
Well, look, Jay.
But
look,
some Negroes would never do it.
Jay, look at their hierarchy. Look at those who are, look at the boule. Look what they were designed to do. They were designed to continue to perpetuate what Europeans had done at our expense. They were designed to do divide and conquer. The boule was created at the time of Marcus Garvey coming together to challenge him. And Marcus Garvey, what was he talking about? Being collective. What is the European talking about? Being individualistic, being undermining, being divided. And so the boule and these sororities and fraternities have perpetuated that. You know?
You know what they are, Oshie? And I'm very clear on this. Them Negroes are nothing but gatekeepers.
Yes. That's what they are. They're gatekeepers.
They are gatekeepers.
Yes. Yes.
And nobody wants to tell that to them for what it is.
They wonder.
Anytime a Negro start talking to me about that fraternity or sorority nonsense, they just get it. I don't even be nice about it. I start right quick. How you gonna rep some Greek sugar honey iced tea? That's the beginning.
Yeah.
And then I'll go as far as I have to take it. I'll give you a prime example. Why ain't the AKAs out there for their homegirl, Kamala? I got me a Yoruba husband, Paris. You know what I mean? Why they ain't taking out over the top? Why ain't they in every city with the chapters out there repping for her doing what's necessary?
Let me say this. Because they are for maintaining and sustaining the privilege that Caucasians created. Okay? And because they feel that they will get some favor within that system. So if I don't buck it, I'm not trying to be separate from that. I'm not trying to create my own thing. I'm working within it. And so I want the benefits from it. So no, they're not going to do it. And that's pretty much our situation. It's just like those in politics. We have all these people in politics. We have more people who are in elected positions ever before. And yet our condition collectively is worse. So, those who...
They're not going to do nothing to liberate other black people that's not part of that sugar honey iced tea into a better position than them.
Right.
And they don't even have the intelligence, nor the wherewithal, nor the foresight to place themselves in the position to be true gatekeepers. A true gatekeeper is someone that's doing something for the community, for himself, for the people. That's a true gatekeeper. You just an overseer, if the truth be told.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just get a kick every time I see your boy, No Neck Rollin.
Rollin Martin?
No Neck Rollin talking about he alpha or whatever. You know what I mean? Did you ever see the video of him dancing?
I saw that.
Oh, was that not a funny?
Yeah, I saw that.
He had the nerve to have on African gear doing that nonsense, man. Dancing. You know what I mean? Yeah. He loved to dance.
Well, see, I think... Skinning and grinning.
Skinning and grinning. You know, I get on Roby. You know what I mean, No Neck. But I will say this about No Neck. Every now and then, he'll drop a jewel. That's the only reason why I listen to him. Because every now and then, he drop a jewel. And when he dropped the jewel, it'd be a jewel that you must be able to take in and expound on it when it is necessary.
Well, I say this. I think that those brothers and sisters, and I use that word loosely, who are the gatekeepers, who really toe the line like Stephen A. Smith, who told the lie for the European, who told the lie for the European, does us a constant disservice to the will and the real aspirations of our people. These are the buffers. These are the individuals who are the go-betweens to make sure that we are dismissed and that we're unable to attack the Europeans who really control this. So we got to go through these Negroes, these, you know, self-serving Negroes. And it's a real problem. And it's one of the main... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Could you name me... Hold on 1 second, O.C. Can you name me someone that you could say that's taking a strong stance out in public that is in the midst of the Yoruba? I'm trying to think of someone that takes a strong political stance that's out in the hemisphere that's controlled by the Yoruba. I can't think of no one.
No, if you're controlled by them, if you are in their system, you adhere to, you capitulate, you acquiesce to what they present to you and what they impose on you. You don't go outside of it, because once you do that, then now you're done. You're ineffective, and so the next one comes up. Because what they want is, they didn't want somebody like Colin Kaepernick. They wanted somebody who they could control, like Stephen A. Smith. They want controlling Negroes. They don't want those men and women who are adversarial. They don't want those who are speaking out. They don't want those who have an understanding of what has happened to us and trying to articulate that to us. No. Because
there's only one. I would say there's two that have a decent voice. One is Howard Bryant, who I like. I like Howard. But he done had him a Yoruba woman, so I got to question him sometime. And William Roden.
Yeah.
Mike
Bill Roden.
Yeah. Every now and then, Mike Wilbon will say something. He'll always go back to his Negro way.
When
he asked.
Right. So, the only one I admired from back in the day was Ralph Wiley, and most contemporary is Bill Roden. All the other ones, man, you know. The people who are on Fox, the people who are on ESPN, whatever, there is no real strong voice. But I got to get ready to get out of here, man. Jay.
Hey, Oshie, you have a beautiful weekend.
You too, you dear brother.
Spend that money with black folks, and hopefully black folks will spend money with you and your brothers and sisters.
You
peace
bet.
Peace and love to the family. And let me give a shout out right quick.
Sure.
To my main man, my Ace Coon Boone. The man who didn't have no white meat turkey yesterday, my brother Ralph.
Right on, brother Ralph. They didn't know white meat turkey yesterday, huh?
I hope my brother didn't.
Right on. Okay.
I'm a good one, man.
Well, I love Hotep. Ralph, man. Hotep. Yeah, I love Ralph Scarborough's good brother, man. That's why I'm on this radio program today, because of Ralph. A good man, a good brother. But, we're getting ready to get out of here. I want just to say a few things before I... close the show, and I appreciate every time I have the opportunity. I know I had some glitches today, and that happens, so I had to play some music a couple of times. But the bottom line is this program that I have here, and believe me, I don't give you my opinion. I don't give my opinion, because my opinion is profane. I be cussing them up. I'm serious. What I try to do is give you the perspective of our scholars, our historians, brothers and sisters without foundation money, grant money. They reclaimed, recaptured, and restored the history of our people and understood the direction that we must go. It ain't assimilating. It ain't integrating. It ain't going along to get along. It ain't hoping and wishing in the by and by. None of that. What it is about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for us as a people. Brothers and sisters, you have a great weekend. You enjoy yourselves. Be safe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Oh, let me mention, too, my good brother Yosef Muhammad's program, Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness, over on Blog Talk Radio today. From 4 to 6, I was I failed to announce this program, and the number to call to listen is 563-999-3089, 563-999-3089, Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. Brothers and sisters, you have a great weekend. Enjoy yourselves. Be safe out there. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bless you, brothers and sisters. Bibi Fahodie. Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Oh, I didn't end this program correctly, did I? I sure didn't. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants that they can't do without and they don't want to pay for. Peace, family.